Welcome to Inner Circle, the premier softball podcast. Here are your hosts, Eric Lopez and Victor Anderson.
Bouncer towards second. Tough play from Clifton. Gloves throws. She got her. Exit 132A. Here we come. For the 11th time in school history and the 6th time in 7 years, Oklahoma is headed back to the Women's College World Series.
Ground ball towards second. Clifton, gloves, throws. She got her. They did it. They did it. The Oklahoma Sooners are the three-time national champions, and they dogpile in the circle. The Sooners beat Auburn 2-1, and they take home the national title.
And welcome to another edition here of In the Circle. You just heard Oklahoma knocking off Auburn in the Super Regionals to advance once again to the Women's College World Series. And a man who you heard call it, he's in his second year calling all the Oklahoma softball. He's a good luck charm. He's 2-for-2 now and making a trip to the Women's College World Series. I speak of a man that Sooner fans know very well across all the sports, Mr. Chris Plank. Going back to Oklahoma City, not bad, right?
Yeah, I like to call it job security. As long as they keep winning, whenever I'm a play-by-play guy, I feel like that's good luck. And I'll say this, guys, I'm really pumped to be on the podcast. I have developed this insatiable passion for college softball, and I appreciate the way you guys cover it and the job that you guys do in giving a voice to those of us who love this sport as much as we do.
He's caught the bug like the rest of us, Eric.
Thanks. Hey, I appreciate that very much. Your team has provided a lot of drama this postseason. Certainly Auburn, ironically, you took care of business in Auburn, but you had to do it on the road. Let's start with the Auburn Super Regional. All the hype about the rematch after for the national championship from the year before, and you're going on the road against Auburn. Take me through what it was like to be there between the plains there in Auburn.
Well, it's a very passionate fan base. The job that Clint Myers has done at Auburn is amazing. Here's a program that plays in, arguably one of the more challenging conferences in a sport, in any sport. I mean, the SEC in softball is about as difficult as it gets. I mean, every team made the tournament. So you don't see that in many other sports, if any. So he's done an incredible job, and I hate to use the term rebuilding, but I guess you have to, in rebuilding and reloading that program, and their fans are passionate. And they make for a really neat setting. And, guys, it was one of the few times this postseason where Oklahoma, Paige Parker looked like Paige Parker. And then they jumped on him early on Saturday and never let him back up. This was a setting to where the Sooners, I think, thrived, and they thrived on the road all season long. And, I saw that aggressive nature that, at times maybe you could say has been lacking, just where they were the aggressors and weren't having to play defense. They went out and landed the first punch, and, Auburn wasn't able to strike back. Did the Sooners get a few breaks? Sure. In game one, the ground ball down the line that was ruled a fair ball and the Sooners added their third run. That was a break. But guess what? Auburn wasn't able to put one run on the board. On Saturday, when Macy Hatfield went up on the first pitch that Paige Lowry threw to Coop and took it over from over the fence. I mean, that was a break in what could have been a game-tying situation. So, to me, I look at those as situations where they created their own breaks and they took advantage of it, and they were just hands down the better team this weekend. From a Sooner perspective, guys, it was fun to see heading into the Women's College World Series this weekend.
And the thing is, you almost didn't make it to Auburn. You were part of really the most dramatic regional of the year and one of the more memorable regionals. I don't think it'll be ever forgotten in Norman really wild. I mean, the tone was set even from the opening game when Tulsa beat Arkansas in the walk-off.
Yeah.
You had weather issues. And then Oklahoma loses to North Dakota State, the opener, to put yourself in the loser's bracket, first defending champion to lose the opening game since 85, and you had to dig yourself out of the loser's bracket. You knock off a very talented Arkansas team, and then you're three outs away from your season ending against Tulsa after you came back and avenged the win, the loss against North Dakota State. You run-ruled North Dakota State.
Yep.
But you're three outs away in a classic extra inning game, 10-inning game, and you hit two-run homers in that 10th inning to pull it out. And then Paige Parker in Oklahoma, you closed the door in the shot. But that was unbelievable. I mean, what was it like to be a part of that regional with the ups and downs like the you guys had to go through?
It was pretty wild because if you looked across most of the other regionals, the dominant seed held serve. And, well, in fact, every every higher seeded team moved on to the Super Regional. There were zero upsets in any of the regionals, but yet we started the madness by losing to North Dakota State. You know, I talked to Coach Gasso afterwards, and she said, you know, losing that game kind of reset our focus. And it seems wild to say that. You know, we lost the game to a North Dakota State team, and that was just really what started us. Well, wow, you know, what a dramatic way to do it. And I'm glad you mentioned the other game. Every game in that regional was great. You know, and it was interesting because the 2017 Norman Regional, guys, was the exact same setup as the 2009 Norman Regional with Oklahoma, Tulsa, Arkansas, and North Dakota State. And when Oklahoma lost to North Dakota State, you started thinking, oh my gosh, this is happening again. Because in 2009, North Dakota State ended up moving on to the Super Regional, the only time they've ever been in school history. And Oklahoma was eliminated by Tulsa, who, by the way, Tulsa was one out away from moving on. I mean, it was wild, all the similarities, but thankfully, all those kind of comparisons ended after Oklahoma was able to eliminate North Dakota State. And going back to that, you know, Arkansas put the winning run on brought the winning run to the batter's box. You know, on Saturday night, late into the evening, and the Sooners had to hold on to get the win. So it was a fascinating regional. You know, from 1 through 4, from game one to game however many, it seemed like we played 20 that weekend, but from game one to game six, and they just to see this team kind of have that wake up call, and to see, you know, and I don't know. Again, how deep you want to go, guys, but to see they kind of started rallying around a message, and that message was the three. And, you know, it was a story that was told by Sarah Roberts, who is their outgoing now FCA director. I did a whole podcast on it. It's an incredible story. And this team rallied around it, and it kind of became their rallying cry that it was everyone had everyone's back, and it was all for one. So it was a fascinating rally. It was a phenomenal performance, and it's one that still, you know, I'm sitting there at Auburn this week, and there's a part of me that's like, how are we here? You know, how have we had this situation from a team that got beat by North Dakota State and was down like they were, as you mentioned, at Tulsa? How did we get here? But it's just that grit, that blue-collar mentality, and that never-say-die mindset that this team has.
And in a way, it kind of tells the story a little bit about your season, because you were the target this year. You were the pick to win by a lot of people before the year. You had won the national title last year. Some people were surprised by that. Maybe some felt you were a year ahead of schedule. Yeah. But you, as a result, you were everybody's target. And it didn't go smoothly, maybe as some would have thought. I remember you lost to Cal Poly, for example.
Twice
during the season. They had a great pitcher in the Highland. But still, the expectations were so high, people were saying, like, what's wrong with Oklahoma? And then, meanwhile, you're bringing in Paige Lowry, who had just transferred, you know, trying to fit her into the role. Did you at any point worry about, man, everybody patted this team on the back, and now we're the target. Maybe there's a little bit of a hangover from last year.
I think that's a fair point. And I don't know if the term hangover is one I would use as much as still kind of trying to identify roles. If, you know, you lost a senior class that was deep. You know, there's a lot of names that were in that senior class, but I mean, from those who contributed last year, it was really a two-person senior class, and Aaron Miller and Katie Self. And guys, I'm not just saying this because there's a pretty good chance you might be listening to your podcast, but there's not many leaders like Aaron Miller. I mean, the way that she had a passion for the game and the way that she handled that freshman class and the way she never let that team die. You know, you go back to last year's season, they started out 0-2. You know, and you needed a leader. Well, this team didn't really have that vocal Aaron Miller, and I think that it took some time for a leader to emerge. And, you know, Kelsey Arnold was put in that spot, and she was challenged to get out of her comfort zone. You know, Kelsey's a phenomenal defensive player, but she's not a real vocal player. And she was kind of charged and challenged to come out of that role and or step into that role and come out of her shell. And I think in time she did that. You mentioned developing Paige Lowry's role. I mean, that was something that was a process through time. You know, you look back at that game she pitched against Ole Miss, I mean, it would seem like that was her freshman season, and this is her senior season. And then in that, too, the development of a staff. You know, Patty Gasso has talked about it. Coach Melissa Lombardi has talked about it. It's a staff mentality. It's not just Paige Parker and the Sooners. It's Paige Parker, Mariah Lopez, Paige Lowry, maybe more so Paige Lowry out of the pen, Nicole Mendez in matchup time, and the Sooners. You know, they have a staff, which is something that they sure didn't have last year. So, you know, and then – add one more thing to it. I think they were still trying to identify who was going to do what. In other words, you know, Nicole Mendez, who was their leadoff hitter for a majority of the season, Nicole Mendez, she wasn't even in their starting lineup for a majority of the first part of the season. So to kind of see the way that she is, sorry, my kids are throwing a fit, to see the way that she, you know, Nicole Mendez didn't even play in the early part of the season, and now she's their starting right fielder. She's their leadoff hitter. She's their do-everything. So to see the way that Nicole Mendez has developed into that role has been pretty phenomenal to watch as well, too. It's a conglomerate of things that have come together at the right time to where they're playing their best softball when it matters most.
Of course, Paige Parker, everybody knows, led to the national championship last year with her arm. The expectations are through the roof with her. And what happens with the great pitchers and pitchers that are successful right away, every game gets nitpicked. And certainly she had her struggles with the strike zone and control in the regionals. But, boy, she bounced back at Auburn. Describe the year that Paige has had. And if we've kind of, because of the success last year, we forget the fact she's still just a youngster. She's still a sophomore.
Yeah.
And now we just kind of nitpick everything. It's like, wow, you know, what's wrong with Paige Parker? When in reality, she's still pretty good if you take away last year, right?
Yeah, well, and Paige going into her junior, I mean, Paige is a junior. So last year she won the national championship as a sophomore.
That's
and
right.
I think what you've seen in Paige's development this year, guys, is that, you know, people are really studying her, so she has to adjust. Every pitch has to be perfect because, you know, when you get a chance to hit against Paige Parker, you know, I would make it akin to trying to hit as a baseball player against a Nolan Ryan or someone like that. You're pinching against, you're hitting against the best, and if you're able to get a hit against Paige Parker or a home run, which was a struggle for her early in the season, well, then you're going to be able, you know, that's a nice little skin to have. So I think you've seen Paige develop and evolve as, you know, those who are scouting her and hitting against her have evolved and kind of challenged themselves too. So it's been really fun to watch. You know, guys, there might not be a better or person who's a bigger student of the game than Paige Parker when it comes to the way that, you know, she respects the craft and the way that she works on it and the way that she communicates with Coach Lombardi and her catcher, Leah Wodak. She is a softball fan and a softball artist through and through. And, you know, she wasn't going to be, it's so unfair because she was down, but it's not like she was losing a lot of games. She was just struggling a little bit, giving up the long ball. And, you know, as you mentioned in the regional, kind of finding the strike zone every now and then. But, you know, in time, she's going to get it right. And she got it right at the right time. And the postseason is where she really seems to find another level. And she has and did for the Sooners against Auburn. And I would expect that we would see her coming up this weekend whenever they take on, you know, Baylor to start things off. And I would expect and really think that we would see her from, you know, here on out being the first day starter whenever they get things going against Baylor. If they advance to Washington, you might see her start that game. But she's been it, man. And she's finally found that level that we expected from her here late in the season.
Of course, yes, as I misspoke, she is a junior. I've blocked off that super regional year at Alabama when you had to go on the road.
Yes.
And it's funny, I only bring that up because I felt that year, and I definitely felt this year, that you should have been a top eight seed as Oklahoma. It was kind of under the radar with the whole Minnesota controversy. But considering that Oklahoma wins a league that's rated third best conference, and I think the story in this postseason, Chris, is, and you mentioned you're going to play Baylor, is the fact that the Big 12 softball, I think, has made noise this year. And maybe, you know, all the focus on the SEC and the Pac-12, rightfully so. But look at Baylor, what they just pulled off against Arizona. Oklahoma State beating Florida in the regional game, taking a game, forcing an if-necessary game. Even Texas getting to a regional final. This is a great league, and I feel like Oklahoma doesn't get enough credit for winning the regular season. I think people kind of take it for granted. Well, Oklahoma just won another Big 12, but it's a really good league, and I thought they should have been a top eight seed. Was that any conversation, discussion at all when the seedings came out?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I think Coach Gasso was very much unafraid to say, hey, this is unfair. And, you know, I'm glad you guys mentioned it because I think it was unfair to both Oklahoma and Auburn to a certain extent, much more so for Oklahoma because they had to go on the road. But it was unfair to Minnesota. It was a shot at Louisiana Lafayette. It was a shot at James Madison, if you will. This was horrible what they did to some of these schools and sending them on the road for these super regionals. And I know everyone can't host, but you're going to improve Ole Miss, you know, 11 spots based on winning a tournament with some of the losses that they have on their resume this season. It's pretty ridiculous to see the way that the selection committee let things get away from them. And let me add this to it, since you brought it up. I understand why that they would not be able to give the Big 12 or maybe even to a certain degree the Big 10 respect, because there's no representation for the Midwest or for the Big 12 in this selection committee. I mean, look at the makeup of the selection committee. The closest thing you have to the Midwest is an administrator from Central Arkansas and someone who was a grad assistant at Kansas or worked on, I think they worked in a marketing department at Kansas when they were a graduate. I mean, it's ridiculous the lack of a true kind of national diversity they have with the selection committee. And it's a joke. And until they do something about it, until somebody steps up and says, hey, we need to look at the regionality of this a little bit more so than we will, this is going to continue to happen. And I understand that Oklahoma might get a little bit of a short end of the stick because, hey, the College World Series is in Oklahoma City, and some view that as an advantage, trust me. I heard it from all the Auburn fans when we were leaving on Saturday. But it's ridiculous to see the lack of respect that was given. And honestly, guys, I think this team wore that. I think they put that as a chip on their shoulder, especially whenever they came to Auburn. Maybe not so much when they started hosting the regional, but when they went to Auburn and the lack of respect to not be at home for the super regional, I think that was, I don't think anyone would publicly say it, but I think you could see that they wanted to go out and prove that, hey, we are a national seed and we deserve to be at home in this setting, and obviously it's worked out for the best for them.
No, I agree, and like you said, I think you said it perfectly. You know, it's you're not hurting just Oklahoma, you're hurting Auburn by underseeding Oklahoma, and Auburn paid the price for that, and that's the unfortunate thing. And I think the thing I would add as far as the committees are, you know, feel free to have eye tests, feel free to watch a few games, because I think anybody that watched Oklahoma or Minnesota this year would, you know, yeah, that's one of the top 16 teams in the country that should host. So I 100% agree with you on that.
Yeah. And I'll add this, in any other sport, if a Power 5 conference team, let's just say the Big Ten, is left out like they were in this, it's a joke, and it's a national outrage. And just because, I guess, maybe softball hasn't quite hit that, you know, 365 national spotlight, it wasn't there, but that was a travesty. And listen, you can tell me and send out all the statements you want that, well, the rankings don't really matter and they're not really an indication. Great. Well, then quit putting them out. You know, then quit putting out these, this is how the selection committee views it, because there's no way that a team can drop from six to unranked essentially in 1 week when they didn't do anything wrong. And I think what happened in Minnesota is a black eye on college softball. And I think that it was good to see Oklahoma kind of rally and be the tone setter for those who were wronged in this selection process.
Amen, brother. We can spend time with you, best friend.
Preach.
I love it. I've been doing it, man. I hear you, man. I hear you. But fortunately for Oklahoma, they got through that, and they are in the World Series, and they see a very familiar foe, Baylor, in the matchup. How surprised are you, considering what Baylor knocked off Arizona? And here we are, Oklahoma and Baylor in the Women's College World Series. Glenn Moore, they do a great job over there. But, wow, what an impressive performance they had against Arizona.
Yeah, and these two teams, Oklahoma and Baylor, put on one heck of a show whenever they played each other during the regular season. Whether I can't remember if we played two games on Saturday or two games on Sunday. I think we played two games on Sunday whenever they played during the regular season. But to answer your question, yeah, I was really surprised and really happy to see Baylor move on. And it had nothing to do with Katie Malaga potentially breaking Lauren Chamberlain's record. I just like to see the Big 12 represent the way they do and the way that they did. And Baylor's been one of those teams that's been on the come for the better part, you know, the last 5 or 6, 7 years. And obviously the job that whole staff has done is phenomenal. But as far as matchups, man, you're not going to find two teams more familiar with each other than you're going to get with this, right? They missed out on an opportunity to make this the fifth matchup with each other whenever Baylor was beaten by Oklahoma State in the Big 12 tournament. Oklahoma, of course, had to play Oklahoma State in the championship game there, but they match up really well, you know. And I think, you know, the Sooners were able to win the second game of the Sunday doubleheader, and they did so thanks to some early sparks from Nicole Pinley, who's kind of been their postseason leader, if you will, at the plate. But I really feel confident. It seems like they had some things figured out. And, of course, softball is all about adjustments. I could sit here and tell you that I think Oklahoma had figured out something with what Baylor pitchers were doing. Well, who's to say whenever Baylor went back to the film and back to the chalkboard or the dry erase board, whatever term we want to use, they didn't figure something out. So this is going to be interesting to see what familiar teams that play each other a lot every single year, what adjustments they've made, because I don't really know if you could find two better representatives of not just the Big 12, but obviously South and softball going at each other in the Women's College World Series. And guys, it's the late game. You're going to have a great crowd of Oklahoma fans like you always do, and I think you're going to see a great crowd of Baylor fans traveling up for Waco. I mean, it's no shock here, and it's not breaking news. There hasn't been a lot to celebrate at Baylor Athletics over the last couple of years, and I hope they rally behind and celebrate this team because they've been really fun to watch this year.
And for as much praise as we've been given to Paige Parker and Nicole Penley, and rightfully so, Paige Lowry has been a vital piece to that coaching for that pitching staff for Oklahoma this season. How critical will her success be towards the Sooners trying to defend their national title?
Oh, can we just make up a word that is like infinity? You know, what she's been able to give Oklahoma is something, I think, in capping off this staff mentality, which has kind of become a buzzword for pitching this year in college softball. You know, I talked to Coach Gasso in the pregame, and she said, you know, I don't think we're going to see a pitcher do what Paige Parker did last year again. I think everyone's kind of working towards building a staff. And Paige Lowry, you know, while she's not starting right now recently, she's been coming out of the pen, and that's become her identity. And she's blown away the single-season record for saves. I think she even beat the career record for saves at the University of Oklahoma in one season, and she likes that. She enjoys that. You know, if you can get Mariah Lopez to get you through the lineup a couple of times, maybe three innings, you know coming out of the pen that Paige Lowry is going to be there to shut things down. If Paige Parker runs into trouble late, you know you have Paige Lowry who can come in and shut things down. She's embraced that closer mentality, and she can still, you know, it's not just a one-inning thing. She can get you three, four, or five if necessary. So I think the development that she's had out of the pen has been just astronomically important to this team.
And how big is it for her to kind of buy into that role with Coach Gasso and Coach Lombardi telling her, look, we don't need you to carry all the heavy load. We kind of want you to be that kind of that closer to finish off games if Parker or Lopez do get into trouble. How big is it for her to buy in and embrace that role that she's now established for herself?
Oh, no. I mean, that's you need to have – she has to buy in. I mean, if she doesn't buy in, you know, then it's not going to work. And I think, you know, you go back to when Paige Lowry was being recruited or at least had opened the door to transfer out of Missouri. I don't know what the exact terminology is when something like that takes place. But – I mean, the mindset was, is this something everyone wants? Because she went from being, you know, a 200-inning-a-year pitcher, and you're not going to do that at Oklahoma, now with Paige Parker. And I think what you ended up seeing was, yeah, she absolutely bought in. And it wasn't necessarily always smooth at the start. I mean, she had a great open against Auburn, still walked a lot of hitters, won games, but – no, guys, it was a transition. It took time, and once it clicked, man, it has been otherworldly to see the way that this team has worked as a staff. And listen, it's not always about defined roles either. It's not like, hey, this is a starter, this is a setup person, this is a closer, even though Paige has kind of become that closer. It's really become matchups for them. And when they see a certain matchup, you know, they might go and bring in a Nicole Mendez for a couple of hitters. And I wouldn't be surprised if you saw – here's one Thursday night. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Nicole Mendez pitch maybe an inning if necessary out of the pen, because she had a couple of good innings against Baylor. It's really about matchups, and I think that's going to be the interesting thing to follow, not just this year but going forward when it comes to the way that college softball teams set up their rosters, specifically their pitching staff.
Patty Gasso, of course. What makes her so good? I mean, she's been there a long time. Certainly Oklahoma known for its football, obviously, with the success and that history of the football program. But, you know, I've said that softball program, what she's done there, she could pretty much put it up against anybody. What makes her so good, and how is her and Oklahoma softball looked at in that area now? It's not just football. I mean, I can see it. And then the fans on TV, they're crazy for softball too now.
She's the best coach in the country. And, again, I'm biased when I say that, but it's the way that she has adapted. It's the way that she's, you know, she's had her core values, and those are never going to change. You know, it's going to be about, you know, faith and developing women, and it's going to be about playing hard and having a blue-collar mentality. But the approach and, you know, how she gets that out of her players and what she needs to do, you know, to make sure she's maximizing their potential. I think that's one thing that you've constantly seen her find new ways to go about it. You know, you think about it, guys, you're looking at someone who the expectation every year is the Women's College World Series. You know, that's the expectation. That's the bottom barrel expectation. And they've done it now six of the last 7 years, which is phenomenal. But I think that she loves the game. She has a passion for the game. She has a passion for developing not just student-athletes but women. And I get the biggest kick out of watching her work because she loves the game so much. She loves her players so much. She loves seeing the interest level increase. You know, they'll tell the story a lot. They just unveil new plans for renovations at Marita Hines Field. They're going to have a true press box. They're going to have, I think, a couple of suites that are involved, some extended seating that will absolutely make it a premier place in college softball. But, you know, they used to play at Reeves Park, which is right across the street from where Marita Hines Field is now, and they would have to be picking up trash off the field and kicking off the slow-pitch softball teams in order for them to be able to practice. So to see where she's taken this program and kind of how it's been year in and year out, now you're getting sellout crowds consistently. Season tickets are sold out. You're getting an expanded stadium. It's pretty special to see what she's been able to do with this program and continues to do.
No question about it. Last thing, your thoughts on the field here that'll be in Oklahoma City, and what's going to be the keys for Oklahoma to bring back the national title to campus?
All right, let me give you two quick keys. Real quick. Number one key is good starting pitching from Paige Parker. You've got to get consistency from Paige Parker. You started to see it, and you saw it against Auburn. She's been pretty good against Baylor this year. Let's see if they get that from her. And then the second, guys, this team is at its best when it attacks. And I saw that attack mindset and that attack mentality whenever they were squaring off against Auburn. I want to see that. I want to see that continue this weekend against Baylor. You know, don't let the game come to you. Don't sit around. Don't wait around. Go out and get it. And they did that in the Friday matchup. They did that in the Saturday matchup after the loss to North Dakota State. They did that the rest of the way. It took a little bit to get going against Tulsa in their first game against them. But when they score early, they're usually unbeatable. And so there's two keys. Just, you know, consistent Paige Parker and an attack. And let me throw – oh, boy. I could talk for hours. You guys might have to cut me off on this. But let me throw one more other key out here. Continue to play good defense. When Oklahoma has struggled, and, you know, you go back and look at some of the games where they either lost or didn't play well, there's maybe an error or a missed play whenever they could have turned two and maybe threw one away, or where they had a miscommunication on a cutoff. This is a very good defensive softball team. But whenever their defense, I hate to use the term failed them, but whenever their defense has struggled, that's whenever they're vulnerable. If they continue to play great defense like they're capable of. Whenever I came into the postseason, I had my top five, and two of my top five didn't make it to the Women's College World Series. Three are still there in Florida, Oregon, and Oklahoma. And I think you're going to see OU and Oregon square off in that, I guess you'd say, semifinal game coming up on Friday night, and that's going to kind of be when they need to be at. They've got to be at their best. Listen, I'm not pushing past Baylor by any stretch. Baylor's really good, but I really expect Oklahoma, if they're going to continue what they've been doing, they'll beat Baylor. The big challenge for me then is that stands to looking ahead, and they've got to be at their best defensively if they want to end up in the three-game championship series early next week.
Chris, this was fun. Always a pleasure. Tell the audience where they could find your work and if they want to tune in to see hear the Sooners this weekend.
Go Soonersports.com. On our schedule page, there's links. I lose my mind. I yell and I scream, and I love this team. I've got a podcast up at Soonersports.tv/podcast where you can learn more about the three and do a daily show, 9 to 11. And actually, I do a lot of shows. I do a daily show weekdays, 9 to 11, on Sports Talk 1400 in Oklahoma City and in Norman. And I do a national radio show on Fox Sports Radio on Sunday nights with Arnie Spanier from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. So I try to get Arnie to talk softball, but he's an Arizona grad, so he's done with me. But, yeah, a lot of ways, guys, and I appreciate you having me on. I love being a part of it.
Always a pleasure, Chris. I know you got a busy week, so I appreciate you taking some time. Enjoy Oklahoma City, and good luck this week.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Chris Plank joining us here on the show, here on In the Circle, alongside Vic and Eric. I thought well said.
He mentioned it. Now, a couple of notes that he mentioned about Oklahoma starting early.
Yeah.
Sooners are 32-3 when they score in the first inning, 47-4 when they score first in any game. And you talk about the defense, they are 32-2 when they don't commit any errors. So when they score first and they keep clean defensively and they get the good pitching behind the two pages, Parker and Lowry, they have a chance to repeat.
They do. They'll open up against Baylor, who many are surprised that are here after upsetting Arizona in the Super Regionals, and really maybe the most dramatic Super Regional of all of them, which is saying something because there were some good ones. But
yeah,
certainly to me, that's the biggest story, is Baylor knocking off Arizona at Arizona. And to put it in perspective, Arizona has now hosted 28 Regionals / Super Regionals in Tucson. This was only the second time that Arizona's ever lost either a regional or a super regional at home. The last time they lost was in 2004, which was a long, I mean, that was before this format.
That was before, that was when you had 18 regionals.
Yeah, I'm glad you knew that, because I'll put it in perspective. I was not following softball back then.
No, you weren't.
So it tells you how enormous this was, and it was wild, really. And Baylor outplayed Arizona in a lot of ways. They could have won game one, but it gave to a wild game three. Arizona came up back. Trailed early in that game, took the lead, and then in the seventh inning, Baylor hits the three-run homer, and they pulled it out, and Glenn Moore and those guys, they find a way.
They
get to the World Series. Unbelievable. And I tweeted this out earlier after it happened. Where does this rank from an upset standpoint? Certainly Hawaii over Alabama is number one. I don't think that's going to be tough to top.
Yeah.
Because that was not only was that a 16-1, but it was a Hawaii program against Alabama.
Alabama.
At Rhodes Stadium. But other than that, I think this one's number two. And it's not because, and I know Baylor's very good. I've seen Baylor in person. They're certainly very talented. But to knock off, I think, the best Arizona team Kendre has had there since they were at the last time they were at the World Series years ago, earlier in this decade, I think this was a very loaded team. This was a team that won the Pac-12. There was a lot of people that thought they were going to win the national title. I was in that camp that thought they had a very good chance to win the national title, and they didn't. And as I just gave that stat, the fact that nobody really wins in postseason at Arizona against Arizona makes it a remarkable accomplishment for Coach Moore.
Let me ask you this question. Do you consider Georgia knocking off Florida, the defending national champions, in Gainesville the way they did in that top five?
It's an upset. It's a top five, but I would put Baylor over Arizona ahead of it because Georgia-Florida is an SEC rivalry. So rivalries, you just never know. I mean, you throw out the records, the old cliche.
Right.
But there was matchups there, the familiarity from the talent standpoint. But certainly that's up there because I don't think a lot of people picked Georgia, but I think a lot of people felt Georgia would really put a scare in them, kind of like Alabama did to Florida this year. I mean, if Alabama would have knocked off Florida this year, I don't think we would have considered it a major upset. So it's just remarkable. Again, it goes back to nobody usually to beat Arizona at Arizona was remarkable. But it doesn't take. Baylor played well, and Baylor did a great job of playing that series on their terms and their tempo. And I know a lot of people are upset because they kept intentionally walking MAGA and everything. But you know what? That's what you got to do to win games. And I agree with it. And I thought Glenmore, they controlled tempo. Arizona is kind of like the NBA version of like the Warriors. They got to go when they get going, man. They'll put boom, 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 boom. Next thing you know, you're down 5-6 runs. It's over. And I thought Baylor did a great job all weekend controlling the tempo. They never let the game get away from them. They made big pitches when they did. If they needed to step off and take a timeout to regroup, they did that. And I thought they did a great job with that. And that being said, obviously, a lot of people questioning Mike Kendrea for pulling O'Toole and not bringing her in that seventh inning when they had the two-run lead to work with. I don't know what you thought about that when it happened. Obviously, in I think what Kendre was thinking, O'Toole was getting hit in that sixth inning. Remember, Baylor was about to take the lead until they called the runner for not touching the bag in third.
Yes.
But she was getting hit a little bit in the sixth. But that's one that Mike's going to be thinking about for a little while. And then, obviously, I think they intentionally walked the go-ahead run during that inning.
They intentionally walked the go-ahead run to put it on base.
Hard to swallow from the standpoint that your best pitcher was not in the game at that point.
I was following on social media, both sides made some decisions that a lot of fans were left scratching their head. But Baylor made the decision. Baylor made the right decisions, and that big three-run home run at the top of the seventh.
By McGown, the goose, yeah.
Yeah, the goose. It kind of stunned everybody in Arizona. I know it was stunned. I'm like, wow.
Everybody was.
And then Baylor going on to Oklahoma.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, I think everybody thought once the call was made against Baylor in the sixth inning where the runner at third didn't touch the bag, and it turned out it looked like the right call, but still you don't see that being called. And then Arizona, boom, boom, got the lead. They went up by two. And you're like, well, I guess that's going to be the deciding factor in this regional. But Baylor fought back. They got a leadoff hit. I thought Sherry Kemp was on top of it, working it with Pam Ward. They got a leadoff hit to get that inning going and start turning that momentum around. And next thing you know, you hit the three-run homer, which is ironic. Baylor, not really an explosive power-hitting team. They like to go base by base and aggressive with the base pads. But it's the long ball that gets them in. And then Selman closed it out. Rodoni, Selman, they kind of patched them up throughout the whole series, and they pulled it off, and they got a great win. And, you know, credit to Baylor for doing it. They will be known as the first team ever to knock Arizona off in the Super Regional in Tucson, and also, obviously, the second team overall to win in Tucson and there. That's an amazing accomplishment for them. Part of a trend that happened all weekend long, which was the team that won the first game in the Super Regional would go on to win the next two games in the Super Regional. And that was a big storyline, I thought, Vic. We had talked about it before the season about the change in the format going from 2 days in the Super Regional, which was a single game the first day, and then two games, if necessary, the second day. Yes. Now they have moved to a single game each day, one game each day for 3 days. Florida loses the first game against Alabama, comes back, wins the next two games. LSU comes back from the first game, wins the next two.
Again.
Baylor wins the first game, comes back, wins the next two. Texas A&M.
Baylor being losing the first game and winning the next
two. Right. Texas A&M loses the first game, wins the next two at Tennessee. Baylor, as we mentioned, loses the first game, wins the next two in that series. Prior to, you know, it only have happened only
six times.
Right. There was about an 18% of the chances that you got a chance to win under the old format.
Right. And
it really, 82%, you know, that was the stat. If you won game one, 82% of the time you went on and advanced to the World Series. That was the stat. And that kind of blew up.
That went boom.
And some people, the question is, was it coincidental or was it an effect of the format change? And I think my answer is yes. I think the format had a role into that because teams now are accustomed, for the most part, playing a single game each day, especially in the SEC and the Pac-12. The Big 12 still does a doubleheader here and there, but you're used to playing single games, three-game series. So if you lose the first game, you're not sweating it. Whereas the other thing is, under the old format, if you were down one game, you had to win twice in one day.
Yeah.
And especially if you're on the road, that's hard to do because your pitching situation is just kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, you can still set your rotation however you want. Like, you could throw the same pitcher the same game two, game three. You have more time to prepare. And I don't think it was an accident. Other than Florida, Alabama, the majority, all those game threes that were higher scoring. The weird one that wasn't was Utah, Washington.
Go figure that one out.
But there were, LSU, Florida State, the highest scoring game in that series was game three. Texas A&M, Tennessee was a high scoring game three. Baylor, Arizona was a pretty, high scoring game. Florida, and I guess Florida, Alabama by their terms, that was a high scoring game, 2-1. So both teams actually scored. So it was very fascinating. And that being said, I like it. I thought from a television standpoint, it was phenomenal television. I was glued all day on Sunday. I think it's a lot easier to follow than it was before. Because before, the TV schedule was kind of wacky because you didn't know if the team was going to win game two to force an if necessary game 30 minutes after or 40 minutes after. Oh, what channel is this game going to be on? This was very simple to follow. And I think as a result, I think softball benefits from that because I felt like they dominated the weekend with no NBA finals or playoffs for that matter. There was no NHL Stanley Cup final games. So really the only competition that softball had this weekend was
college baseball finals.
Conference tournaments.
Yes.
Regular MLB games. And
soccer.
MLS soccer. And did you notice on Sunday, ESPN kept Texas A&M and Tennessee had a bit of a weather delay. They stayed with the game on ESPN and bumped MLS to ESPN News.
Yes.
I don't know if that would have happened 8 years ago. So I thought it was a phenomenal weekend for the sport from a coverage standpoint, and it was easy to follow every regional, super regional. So I thought I liked the format from that standpoint, but the question is, do you think it had a factor in all these teams coming back from a 1-0 deficit?
Well, you have to think of it this way. LSU, Florida State. LSU, you knew you're going to have Walt Jasper in game two, who was one out away from throwing a no-hitter in the Super Regionals against the Noles. And you knew you're going to have Hoover available game three. I don't think that had that much of a factor. But think about it this way. The home team in game three had a lead early on. And then the road team came back and won, all except for LSU, Florida State. So you can't really say that the new format had a direct impact because the home teams were taking care of their business in the early part of game three. Give the credit to Texas A&M, to Baylor, for coming back and persevering in advancing to the Super Regionals. And look, Texas A&M, what that pitcher did, given her circumstances, and we've retweeted the story a million times, and for what that young lady did to lose your father, go fly to his funeral, come back, support your team, having to pitch with your season on the line, not once but twice, and to have your teammates behind you, supporting you defensively and offensively, and to get that trip to Oklahoma City, given all those circumstances. I tell you what, man, that if there's a team that I'm going to be rooting for in Oklahoma City, just for that story alone, it's going to be Texas A&M because what that program did in Tennessee, knocking off the Volunteers after losing game one, is a tremendous accomplishment, and it's a credit to the team rallying around an individual that has suffered a tremendous loss.
Harrington is who you speak of, obviously pitches them into the Women's College World Series. That was surreal to see that, and what a comeback for them. They got blown out in game one against Tennessee, and they kind of scuffled down the stretch in the end of the year. Lost 2 out of 3 at home to Tennessee, actually, to end the regular season. Got knocked out by Alabama in the SEC tournament, so I didn't know if they could regroup. If they did, they won their regional, then they fell behind early in game one, but lost game one, and then but they found a way. They won dramatically in game two. They were down early in game three, as you mentioned, but they came back to win 6-5, and for the first time since 2008, Texas A&M is back in the Women's College World Series. And ironically, that was the year they lost to Arizona State in the National Championship Series. Their last win in the Women's College World Series came against number one ranked Florida in a classic semifinal winner advancing game, in a game where Tim Walton didn't bunt in a situation late in that game that could have perhaps helped Florida win. He chose to hit away. They didn't score. A&M pulled it out. That was a Megan Gibson-led A&M team. Jamie Loprice was on that team. Amanda Scarborough, who will be calling the A&M Florida game, was hurt. So she was not involved with that team. She was hurt that year. And then you have, so she's going to be in the booth for that game. And then Sharonda McDonald, who's the assistant at Florida, is going to be the head coach of the Bandits. She played at A&M. She was there in 07. So my point is there's a lot of
interweaving storylines
in that matchup. I think Tennessee, in my opinion, overachieved. I thought they were young, especially in the circle. I thought they had a good year.
Tell you what, Matty Moss is going to be a star in the SEC the next couple of years.
So that's my takeaway from that series. You mentioned LSU, Florida State. They did it again. They came from a 1-0 deficit, did LSU. Beth Tarina does it again. Now 10 straight elimination wins in regional or super regional action. I think she's like 18-5 in elimination games in her time at LSU.
She's good.
She gets LSU again to the Women's College World Series 3 years in a row, fourth since she's taken over the program in 2012. They come back and beat a Florida State team that hadn't lost at all this year in Joann Graff Field. They beat them 1-0 in Game 2 after dropping the first game, and then a wild game in Game 3. Seesaw affair. LSU pulls it out 6-4 to get back to the Women's College World Series as Beth Tarina does it again.
Yeah.
They just play with their backs against the wall, and they're tough as nails. A shame that somebody had to lose that series. Certainly feel for Lonnie Alameda in Florida State. Had a phenomenal year. Dominated the ACC. Maybe her best team she's had there. And that's saying something. She's been to the Women's College World Series multiple times. But a gut-wrenching loss for them. They had opportunities. And I can think back to the sixth inning. They had a chance. Their best player wore it at the plate. At least best hitter. And I think it was bases loaded. And they can only get one run in that inning. They just didn't break it open. They never got that big knockout hit. But LSU pitching did that. Hoover and Walt Jasper, that combo gets him back to the Women's College World Series. And Beth Tarina, I think, has cemented it. She's the best coach in the history of that LSU program. I think she surpassed Yvette Girard because now she has really risen that program to the point where they're expected to be in the Women's College World Series every year. Unbelievable. Again, and I've tweeted it out, the best coach right now in any sport with their team against the backs against the wall. There's nobody better than her right now.
No, and the numbers speak for themselves. 18-5 in elimination games.
Yep, including regionals, super regionals, and Women's College World Series elimination games. They're 18-5. 18-5, and I believe they've won 13 of those in regionals and super regional games. I think the next closest coach is at 8. To put that in perspective, they've won 10 in a row elimination games.
Yeah,
10 in a row.
I'm amazed by that myself. And I'm surprised, Eric, in regards to how she's able to continue to put her teams in position to be successful when they're having their backs against the wall. And oh, by the way, that game that she won to send into the Women's College World Series, her 400th win as a head coach.
And this year, they had a come-from-a-loser's bracket in Baton Rouge. They beat Louisiana Lafayette, their in-state rival, twice to advance. Because Louisiana Lafayette was a kind of that hurdle for the LSU. They had knocked them out a few times in the past, and especially the most recent in 2013. So they came back, beat Louisiana Lafayette twice to get to Florida State. They lose game one to Florida State. They're the only team to beat Florida State this year at home. They beat them in the second game and then beat them 6-4. They got to Burroughs, and they pulled it out. Unbelievable job for Beth Tarina and LSU, who to me right now, I mean, it's her and Paul Mineri. To me, are the top coaches in that program, in that university right now. And they'll take on UCLA that found ways to win. They got pushed by Ole Miss, but UCLA coming from behind game one of that super region, which seems like a million years ago. They were down to their last outs in game one.
Last
in the seventh
strike.
Inning, strikes, and they found ways to win. And I thought that was a sucker punch to Ole Miss. They win game 2-1-0, and the Bruins back in the Women's College World Series.
That's gonna be an intriguing matchup, LSU and UCLA, how those two teams play. And for UCLA, that's gonna be an 11:30 start time for UCLA. How will they adjust their body clocks to that early start? I know they had to do it last year because of weather in Oklahoma City, but how they'll be able to do it again against LSU is going to be intriguing to see. And Eric, I do want to propose this question to you. Holly Rowe, who was phenomenal as a reporter at the Women's College World Series throughout softball this year, she tweeted out an interesting question. Should the Women's College World Series reseed? Division 2 does it after when they get to their Final Eight. Division 3 does it when they get to their Final Eight. Baseball does it. Are you for or against reseeding teams when we get to Oklahoma City?
No. I don't think you should reseed.
Why?
Once you make the bracket's done. You can't assume that upsets will occur. Here's an idea. Seed the teams properly, then you won't have to worry about it. Oklahoma shouldn't have been a 10 seed. They should have been a top 8 seed. That's the issue. A lot of times where this happens is you miss the seed teams. Like if you reseed right now, you would have what? Florida versus Baylor.
You would have Florida and one backer. You have Florida versus Baylor and Washington versus Texas A&M. And then in the second bracket, you would have Oregon versus LSU and UCLA versus Oklahoma. So if you compare it to the original bracket, it's not that big of a difference, so to speak. But I can understand why you want to reseed, but is it really that egregious?
No, I mean, what is the difference? You're going to get Florida Baylor, like you said. You're going to have LSU play Oregon. And you're going to have, then this is all a reaction because of all the conference matchups, right? This is why we're doing
exactly,
this.
Exactly, because three of the four matchups in the Women's College World Series are against conference opponents.
Okay, here's the problem again with the committee, okay? Florida, Texas A&M, you basically guaranteed yourself an SEC matchup there. That's on the committee.
Well, goes all the way back to the regional when you had LSU, where we had Florida and Alabama as that 1-16 matchup.
If you go based on the way they seeded it, not, you know, because when you seed this,
yes,
you have to project that the higher seed's going to win.
Yeah.
They had set up an SEC matchup.
Yeah.
You look at Washington and Oregon, that was chalk. That's how they set it up. You don't like to see all conference matchups in the World Series?
And by the way, you have Washington, Utah in the Super Regional.
Yes. So you were guaranteeing, basically, if Oregon held serve, a all Pac-12 matchup. And the Baylor-Oklahoma thing, you know, that happens. That happens.
Yeah.
But how do we know Baylor's not better right now than some of the other teams? I mean, that's why I don't like the reseeding thing, because you're basically saying, well, Baylor's the worst team. How do you know? Based on what? They just knocked off Arizona.
At Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, the NBA doesn't reseed.
No.
So I don't like it. Now, if you want to talk about maybe changing the format as far as how they do the tournament, where they cross, you know, they cross them over after the winners, you know what I'm saying, with the elimination games and the winners bracket game after they're done, they kind of cross them over. And, you know, I kind of wish they would do it like college baseball, where they just break them down into two brackets and those teams play in double elimination and then play each other for the national championship.
That's essentially what they're doing here.
No, they don't. No, they don't. Because what they do is, for example, the winner of the Florida A&M game will play the winner of LSU-UCLA. And then...
Oh, I see what it is.
But then, meanwhile, they're going to probably play a team that comes out of the loser's bracket from the other side.
Yeah. I see what you're talking about.
It's just to me...
So essentially, you want to play like two regular double elimination brackets.
Just have Florida and A&M, UCLA and LSU play until all three of the four are eliminated twice, and then move on to the national championship game. And then maybe I'll be open to reseeding if you want to do it that way. But the way they do it now, it doesn't really matter how you reseed it, because they're all going to cross anyway. So
yeah.
I don't really think that's a big deal. I just think you should seed the tournament better. And just look at what baseball did this year. Look at the baseball. They just had their regionals announced and their selection committee. And it's a crazy concept. They have no conference super regionals projected to match up if the higher seeds win. How about that?
I know.
And heck, they had a Florida team actually fly out of the state for a regional.
Shocking.
Florida Gulf Coast, of all people, going to North Carolina.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. A novel concept.
And they actually tried to seed them 1 through 16. And multiple conferences. Long Beach State was a host and stuff like that. So, I don't think so. I think that's a knee-jerk reaction because of the way it drew up with the Pac-12 matchup, the All-SEC matchup, and an All-Big 12 matchup. It happens, but, it is what it is. So, I'm not too keen on that. But quick thoughts. Oregon beat Kentucky. Washington beat Utah. Washington-Utah, the highest-scoring super regional ever, and yet...
They go 2-1 game three.
Which, Avalo, yeah, I mean, that was the thing. It was kind of like, when is pitching going to step up? And they did. And then Oregon won game one, had to come from behind in the seventh inning to beat a young Kentucky team, 2-0 series. Very interestingly, Auburn got swept, Kentucky got swept, Ole Miss got swept. I mean, LSU kind of, you know, for all the talk about the SEC, 13 teams getting in, 8 teams, you know, in the super regional, they end up with Florida, A&M, and LSU. Ended up with three.
Well, two of them were guaranteed because of the way the brackets was turned out.
Sure.
But all things considered, and all they really had to get credit to the home teams protecting their home turf.
Well, I mean, they're not as good this year, though. I mean, you had Tennessee lose, you had Florida State lose, and you had Arizona lose, and Auburn. Half the Super Regional hosts lost, so 50-50. The clip had been going around that 90-95% prior to this year.
But does it go more? Does it go back to that change of format, playing 3 games in 3 days?
I think that's a part of it. I think in Oklahoma, we had Chris mentioned it. I thought Oklahoma was underseeded, and Auburn paid the price for that.
Yeah.
Some would suggest Baylor was underseeded. Who knows? I don't know about all that, but Baylor's good, obviously. A&M, Tennessee, that's an SEC matchup. That's always a flip of a coin. Going back to, you asked me earlier, why isn't Florida, Georgia maybe considered a bigger upset? Because it's an SEC series, basically. So anything can happen in an SEC series. So it's not as big of a shock as far as I'm concerned there. So that's kind of the story from the Super Regional. I thought it was an exciting Super Regional. It was a wild Super Regional, some upsets. You've got a 13, a 10, and a 15 in the Women's College World Series. And some very interesting matchups. We mentioned the storylines with Florida and Texas A&M. LSU, UCLA, they played earlier this year in Mary Nutter. UCLA won that in extra innings, but that was in February. It's a million years ago. Oregon and Washington, Pac-12 matchup. Washington beat Oregon 2 out of 3 earlier this season. That was, I believe, in Oregon. And then Oklahoma beat Baylor head-to-head 2 out of 3. A lot of familiarity as far as head-to-head matchups. Very, very interesting. Should be an interesting tournament. It's going to be interesting. LSU, UCLA. Both the LSU and UCLA were there last year, but UCLA with Garcia, who they've kind of rode into the in that regional and the super regionals. Young freshman, LSU with the veterans with Wall Jasper and Hoover. Oregon, no Sheridan Hawkins, but they're back in the Women's College World Series. Great job by Mike White. Washington, young sophomore, they're back in the Women's College World Series after not making it recently. Oklahoma, of course, the defending champs. Glenn Moore back in there. A&M back in there. So you got some fresh faces in there, but you still got some of the top teams in Florida. And certainly, I think Florida and Oklahoma are the teams to beat over there in Oklahoma City, and that would probably be my pick if you forced me to make it. That's who I think will end up playing for the national championship.
Yeah, and as much as I don't want to disagree with you, I cannot disagree with you. I think, however, there's something to be said about a team winning the way they did in Arizona, in Baylor. If there's ever a team that will not be afraid of the big stage.
Well, the thing is, they know Oklahoma very well. Yes. I mean, that's the thing. When you have these matchups, the teams know each other. Oklahoma and Baylor know each other. Oregon and Washington know each other. Now, Florida A&M didn't play, but they still kind of know each other a little bit.
They played a couple years ago.
Yeah, they played. They've played recently, but not this year. Oklahoma, Baylor, and Oregon, Washington do. So, that's what kind of maybe evens the playing field a little bit. Kind of an interesting crapshoot. And then LSU UCLA played earlier in February. Again, that you kind of
light years ago.
I don't know. It's going to be an interesting World Series. I think there will be high expectations. The Super Regional numbers are very good. I will be blogging about that this week, so be on the lookout for that. I can tell you that Florida, Alabama, way up compared to Florida, Georgia Super Regional last year. Not a surprise. So we'll get you those numbers this week. So be on the lookout for that on the blog. On that, before we sign off, Vic, we got national champions crowned in Division II and Division III.
Minnesota State Mankato, the Mavericks, winning their first national championship after sweeping the number one ranked Ramblets of Angelo State 2 straight in Salem, Virginia. And we're working to get their head coach to join us on a future podcast. And Virginia Wesleyan, the Mariners, winning their first national championship as well. So we want to send our congratulations to those teams and winning their national championships and bringing their communities much joy back on campus. And oh, by the way, Eric, the MPF season starts this week. Oh, by the way.
We'll get more into that next week in future episodes. The World Series just takes kind of control of it. So that's where our focus will be on. Also, kind of a developing story that happened also the Division II championships. Armstrong,
yes,
team you've seen very well.
Now a lot of people may not be aware of this. Armstrong Atlantic is discontinuing their athletic program. The reason for that is they're going to be merging with Georgia Southern.
The Division I?
Division I, Georgia Southern, okay. And they'll be reemerging under Georgia Southern. So Armstrong Atlantic is discontinuing their entire athletic program. And this is a program that has been a routine visitor to Salem, Virginia. I had a chance to see them a couple years ago in Clearwater, take on Rollins, where they were coming back from their national finalist appearance that year. And it's going to be a program. It's a big loss for the Peach Belt. Because you're losing an Armstrong program because they're disbanding. Monticello, they're going to be leaving the conference in July to join the Gulf South. So that's two programs right there that the Peach Belt, which has been a strong conference in the Southeast region, is going to get weakened. And I fear, and I hope this is not the case, that there might be a bigger gap between Mac Davenport and North Georgia and everybody else. I know Flagler did challenge them in the tournament championship earlier in the month. But our hats off to Armstrong, a tremendous program throughout the years. And we definitely wish all of those players successes, whether they go on to Georgia Southern or they go on to other schools.
And I know you're working on that to get more on that developing story and what the impact on those players. There's a lot of talented players on that team. Would they be on Georgia Southern? Will they? You know, that's going to be very
and also the eligibility. Will they be immediately eligible? Will they have to sit out a year because of the NCAA transfer rules? It's a lot. It's very intriguing.
Now, you don't see that. I don't remember ever seeing anything like this occurring. So I know you might have a guest on as well on that in the future.
I am working as we speak to try and get some more information.
And again, quick word on Division II. Obviously, Minnesota State winning the national titles. How did they pull this off? What was your thoughts on that?
Look, they have one of the candidates for the National Player of the Year. So I'm not really surprised about what they did over there. And you have to listen. Anytime you're competing against the number one ranked team in the nation, which Angelo State was going into that championship series, you're playing with house money. People don't expect you to win. And the Mavericks, again, with their Hall of Fame head coach, rallied, got the troops together, and they found a way to win. And again, look, we know this in championship series. Whenever you're playing a best 2 out of 3, when you win game one, all the pressure's on your opponent. Because they had to win twice. So you have a game in hand. And Minnesota State used that to their advantage. They got the sweep. And now they're gonna be defending national champions. They had a parade celebrating the Mavericks as of the releasing of this podcast. And as we alluded to earlier, we will be working to get a podcast with the head coach of the now national champion Mavericks, hopefully at a later time and date.
That's some wild stuff out of there, and certainly expect some wildness going on at Oklahoma City. Should be a fun one. It'll begin Thursday, Florida, Texas A&M, noon Eastern on ESPN.
Shout out Adam Amina, man of Scarborough, the A-team back together with Laura Rutledge.
You got UCLA and LSU to follow that. The evening session, Oregon and Washington, Baylor and Oklahoma. Beth Mowins, Michelle Smith, Jessica Mendoza back. And Holly Rowe will be on there. Jenny Dalton Hill, good friend, will also be doing a lot of the digital stuff online, as well as their coverage there. So,
and that, does that mean we're going to see Caleb Rode as well?
I have no idea. That's all I know.
You and your multiple sources can't tell if you're going to see.
She might be in studio. She'll probably be in studio.
Actually, she may be on location with the SEC Network.
No, they usually use Amanda for that, but who knows?
Why not?
Test of thousands. I don't make those decisions.
By the way, Rainey Gaffin on the SEC Network did a tremendous job providing the coverage of the SEC, former Tennessee All-American. Shout out to her doing a tremendous job.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was the interesting thing with the coverage expanding this year. You got to see a lot more new faces. A friend, Francesca Anea, for example, got to call the Waco Regional. I think her future continues to rise as far as television. Megan Willis, who in the previous years has been kind of just doing studio, did not only the Norman Regional, but she ended up doing the Knoxville Super Regional. So she was kind of one of their last broadcast teams there as far as the Super Regionals were concerned. That was one of the 8 broadcast crews. Jenny Dalton Hill, Mark Neely got to do the Oklahoma Auburn Super Regional. It was good to see some, you know, different looks there. Sherry Camp Pam Ward did the Arizona one. You had Scarborough with Eric Collins doing Alabama, Florida. Mowins and Michelle Smith did the Ole Miss UCLA with Mendoza there. LSU, at Florida State, you had Jen Hildreth calling the action there with Bruggerman of the NFCA. So, yeah, it was good. I mean, you had Courtney Lyle and Dokic up in Seattle. And they kind of spiced it up a little bit by interviewing a question of the coach right before game three, which was a little different than you normally see. So that was kind of unique from that standpoint. Danielle Lori was phenomenal. Yes. Oregon, Kentucky. Rising star, I think, and she does a lot of Pac-12 games for them all year long. But obviously got the call up here with Trey Bender for the Super Regional as well. So that's always great to see, and great to see some new faces, fresh faces. You mentioned Gaffin in the studio for the SEC this year. So hope everybody enjoys Oklahoma City, everybody. Vic, tell the audience where they can find us.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, In The Circle SB. Subscribe to our podcast on Podomatic and Apple Podcasts. Send us an email, InTheCircleSB@gmail.com. Got some exciting things. We're working on this summer, of course, our NPL coverage, and we'll be talking Women's College World Series. And we're going to work to have our good friend Justin McCloud, who will be in Oklahoma City, which hopefully try a chance to talk to him during the Women's College World Series, get his observations on what he's seeing in OKC.
Well, for Vic, I'm Eric. Hope you've enjoyed this edition of In The Circle. Enjoy the Women's College World Series, everybody.